What's up? This is Movies on Up. You were right to be afraid of the dark. I am Dave, joined by my Mr. Co-host, Mr. Ryan, who is not afraid of the dark as far as I know.
And Dave shed a little light on my number five
I figured,
for the second straight week. Or maybe two out of 3 weeks. Yeah.
It's basically how I'm doing the taglines is I'm taking one of my also-rans that I think is on your list, and that's the tagline.
You got it.
But the tagline this week, you were right to be afraid of the dark. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, we will send you a prize package that you'll open up and be like, oh, wow, that's a great prize package.
That's exactly what you're going
to
say.
To continue, all of October, we've been doing our favorite movies of the years this podcast has existed, along with the movie for the last couple of weeks. Later this week, we have an episode Ryan's really looking forward to. We're doing Suspiria. So listen for that in a couple of days, because I'm sure I'm ecstatic about that one. But this week, we are doing 2016. We only have two more years left until we're caught up to the year of our Lord 2016. Excited for this year. I've been excited for this from the beginning. So Ryan, let's get into it. Your fifth favorite horror movie from 2016.
My number five is the aforementioned Lights Out from David F. Sandberg, starring Teresa Palmer, Gabriel Bateman, Billy Burke, and Maria Bello. Lights Out is a cool idea. I didn't see the short, but if I would have, I'm sure I really would have liked it. I think it's also a concept that's difficult to build into a feature. Some things, I think, just work better in a short form. As a segment in something like VHS, Lights Out would have been golden. That said, it was a good movie with a couple really solid light gags, for lack of a better word. Maybe it felt a bit gimmicky over the course of 80 minutes, and there seemed to be a lot of exposition to kind of prop up what could have just been a cool character in Diana. We didn't need to know her entire backstory. And I think in short form, they wouldn't have had the time to try and over-explain things. I think Palmer and Bello do a very good job in trying to carry the human aspect of this story that kept the movie basically from being an hour and a half of blinking lights.
See, I did see the short, and it was good. It was good for a short. I didn't know how you make a feature length out of it. It was competent. Palmer was really, really good, and Maria Bello was really, really good in it. So I guess that's one way to alleviate not having enough story for 90 minutes is give us really good performances. But David F. Sandberg, it gave us him. I think he's going to go on to have a pretty decent career. I think he's got some stuff lined up that might make a future list eventually. But it's competent. It's one of those that comes and goes that just gets thrown in with your mainstream studio horror movies. My number five, a director we talked about a couple weeks ago with Oculus, Mike Flanagan, wrote with his wife and directed his wife in Hush, starring Kate Siegel and John Gallagher Jr. John Gallagher Jr. having one of those years in 2016 where it's like, oh, that guy's popping up and stuff and being really, really good in them. He's in Hush as, you know, she lives in a house in the woods and she's deaf, isolated in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden she's being hunted by a dude in a mask. And it's a really, really cool take on that kind of genre. Her being deaf lets Flanagan do some cool visual stuff and play with the audio a bit. John Gallagher, who showed up in Cloverfield Lane that year as well, is really good as this creepy stalking killer. He shows up in a mask and you think like, oh, we have our masked killer. And I think it's a really cool moment when he just takes his mask off because you don't expect that. So then it goes from just it's her versus him and not her versus this masked anonymous guy. It's one of those that you can make this movie, it can be a dime a dozen, or you can do a little different stuff with it and make it really impactful. And I really like that. Her being a writer, I liked that because that played into it to where what you could do like, oh, she always writes an ending and she changes the endings all the time. And you make that in it, it works a lot better than the stupid rewind thing in Funny Games that I hate. But it's just a really good performance by her. Performance by Gallagher and really competently directed by Flanagan.
This was my number one.
I did not realize it'd be that high.
Yeah, I really like this movie. I'll move it to my number four just to, again, try not to fuck up the rest of the things that are going to be on both of our lists. There's kind of a rush of sensory deprivation horror movies. There may even be one that we talk about later. It's kind of an inverted version of that other movie. Flanagan, like you said, co-wrote and had his wife star in the movie. He directed it, so it's very much a family affair. And Siegel and Gallagher pretty much carry the whole movie. It is the two of them playing off each other the whole time. And you mentioned the scene where he takes his mask off. Yeah, he stops becoming an anonymous killer at that movie, but it also shows just how sick that guy was.
It's such a haunting scene.
Yeah.
Because it's
she's saying, "Hey, I didn't see your face. I don't know who you are."
Too bad.
Yeah. Now you have.
That's such a, like, you think of horror movies and so many times they rely on one scene, and that scene in that movie, it's powerful. It's so well done.
They're standing on opposite sides of the front door, which is a glass door. And at that point, you know the stakes of the movie have just changed. There is no way that she's going to be able to get out of this. One of them's going to have to die. That's terrifying, but a really cool scene to watch unfold, because at this point, this guy knows that she's deaf and is not just here to rob her, or it's not just a home invasion. This is a sport kill for him at this point.
He's no longer the strangers.
Right.
He's a hunter now.
Yeah. I think it makes the movie something special. To me, it was kind of a random find on Netflix. I don't know how I came across it. Maybe it was because it was Mike Flanagan, and I was like, oh, shit.
See, I think I don't know if it was a Netflix original movie or not, but I know it's one that I randomly came across. I didn't even realize it was Flanagan until after. Like, it was just one of those, like, I'll throw this on, and pleasantly surprised. My number four, directed by Andre Ovredal, starring Brian Cox, Emile Hirsch, Ophelia Lovibond, and all really, really good performances. It's The Autopsy of Jane Doe. This is one of those where, that's the premise. It's an autopsy of Jane Doe, and you don't know where it's going to go from there. And you're best off not knowing where it's going to go from there. Emile Hirsch, who was on the verge of becoming one of the biggest movie stars ever until Speed Racer happened, now he still shows up and stuff, and when he does, he's really, really good in it. This is no exception. Brian Cox, who is at his best, I think, when he's outside of his wheelhouse. We told the story on the Super Troopers episode where he reached out to them and wanted to be in Super Troopers because he'd never really done comedy before. He's done horror before, but maybe not like this. He was in that one where the kid killed his dog, or he killed somebody's dog. Red, I think it was called. I don't know. But Brian Cox is just one of those. I love watching him in anything. Him and Emile Hirsch in this movie are just really, really good. It's just one of those that I don't want to talk too much about because it's a roller coaster, and I don't want to tell you, like, oh, 30 seconds into it, you go over this bump. 45 seconds in, there's this twist. Just go in and watch it. It's a really good, well-acted, well-made movie.
My number three, we talked about The Guest feeling like it was sort of transported from the 1980s. The Guest is a better version of an 80s transplant movie than Stephen Kosansky's and Jeremy Gillespie's The Void, starring Aaron Poole, Kenneth Walsh, Daniel Fathers, and Kathleen Monroe. It's a practical effects heavy movie, which is a great way for any movie to ingratiate itself into fans of 80s horror, and it doesn't shy away from the practical effects. They are as much of a star of this movie as anyone else. It's a bottle movie, but that bottle is full of Lovecraft and batshit crazy.
Until it opens up into a whole other dimension at the bottom of the bottle.
Yeah. The plot is trippy.
Is there one?
Difficult to follow. And maybe not even entirely important. The Void doesn't necessarily feel like it was filmed in the 80s, but it definitely feels like it was made by folks that grew up watching stuff like From Beyond. I think one of the filmmakers was working in an office directly under Guillermo del Toro when he was doing From the Mouth of Madness. And the two of them had got to talking about wanting to do a Lovecraftian movie, and that's sort of what got the wheels rolling for The Void. And you can definitely see the Lovecraft influences. You've got a cult, you've got at the end a really fucked up interdimensional monster. Like, it's all there, but it does seem like a modern spin on that.
This was a little higher on my list, but I'll make it my number whatever we're at now. Just keep it flowing.
Three?
Yeah, it's my number three. I talked about The Final Girls last week being a love letter to slasher movies. This is a love letter to 80s horror movies. That's all it is. Like,
because I don't know what genre this would be from.
Exactly. Like, this is, hey, have you seen a horror movie in the 80s? So did we. It's the Ready Player One of 80s horror movies. I like the performances. Kathleen Monroe is great from Patriot on Amazon. You should watch it if you haven't. If you want to watch it, I'll gladly watch it an eighth time with you. I love her on screen. She's great. It's one of those, I'm not going to call it a fun ride because it's not that goofy fun, But if you like 80s horror movies, there's a lot there for you. Maybe it does feel too much like Ready Player One, where it's like, oh, hey, remember this kind of stuff that was cool? Here it is. Remember this stuff? Here it is. Where's the beef lady of horror? Like, it's just, that's what this movie is. It's a love letter to 80s horror movies. The plot is weak. The performances are good. The effects are great. There's enough there, though. It's a good time.
It's just a vehicle to do a bunch of cool stuff.
Pretty much.
Basically.
Yeah, that's it.
My number two is going to keep that theme this week of sensory deprivation horror. We got a good one this year about monsters that can't see. But this time we've got...
Two this year.
That's true. The other one hasn't come out yet, yeah. So I don't know if it's good. But I do know that Fede Alvarez's Don't Breathe was really good, starring Jane Levy, Stephen Lang, and Dylan Minnette. At the time we record this, Alvarez has only directed two features. I mean, he's got The Girl in the Spider's Web coming out. Hell, it might even be out by the time this list drops.
Later.
I think it's November
or
something.
I don't know what day this is.
Whatever. At any rate, it wasn't out when we recorded this, and it's not a horror movie. But both of his features, Evil Dead and Don't Breathe, have landed on these mini lists. He is a super versatile filmmaker. Evil Dead is a much different beast than a story about a group of would-be robbers stuck in a house with their very capable would-be victim. You take out all the supernatural horror that there was in Evil Dead for this cat and mouse game that is really, really packed with suspense. I will watch anything this guy does. You talk about bands that have like a really great first couple albums. I don't know that there's been a director in recent memory that has come out with two movies, and his first two, that I have liked as much as Alvarez's, where I'm like, all right, two movies
Matthew
in.
Vaughn.
Maybe that's it, but even Matthew Vaughn, I feel like, was quite a while ago. And I think that's where we kind of lose some time. But, I mean, recently, Alvarez with Evil Dead and Don't Breathe, I like both of those an awful lot.
It's my number two as well. Great performance from Jane Levy. Dylan Minnette is really good at what he does. Stephen Lang is this great monster.
Yeah.
It's not a monster movie, but he's...
No, they broke into his house.
Yeah, he's this phenomenal monster. It takes some turns that you don't expect. It's got probably the creepiest scene with a turkey baster I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah, that's uncomfortable.
It's not violent. I mean, it is
violent. Yeah.
It's not gory.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
It's not used to murder someone.
Yes, it's terrifying. It's one of the most uncomfortable, terrifying scenes, cringeworthy
scenes
ever.
That's when he becomes
ever.
A monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's a monster before then, but...
I guess you're right.
Yeah, that's the most monstrous
right.
he gets. But that scene is terrifying. Jane Levy is so good. Stephen Lang is so good. And what I will always say, my favorite director, I don't hide it, is Edgar Wright. And one of my main things I love about Edgar Wright is that the camera is a character in his movies. The stuff he does and the shots. Fede Alvarez does that a lot too. Following up on Evil Dead, where Sam Raimi is another one who the character is a camera in a lot of his stuff. There was some of that in Evil Dead, but a lot more of it here. This movie is wonderfully shot, and it takes place in the dark, a lot of it, and he gets creative about how to handle that. He filmed them in the dark to where they cannot see and just did it in night vision, which for a studio release, people aren't paying $10 to go see stuff in night vision, but it worked.
Not in a regular theater, maybe in one of those adult ones.
But it worked, and what he put the actors through to get those performances, to get those shots, is awesome. And I will see anything he does. And Claire Foy's going to be great as Lisbeth Salander. I really wanted Jane Levy as her. But we're in this world where there's so many superhero movies, and maybe we're bogged down with superhero movies, but there's some directors I watch, and it's like, give them a superhero movie because they would do phenomenal with it. Fede Alvarez is one of those where, like, I want to see him do a superhero movie because I think his style and his camera work and how he gets the performances of the actors will fit that genre extremely well.
Fede Alvarez, and I hate to keep putting him in the horror genre, girl in the horror spider's web. Yeah, the girl who kicked the hornet's nest. That's actually one of the books. So the one he's doing, I mean, it doesn't have like a horror aspect. At least I don't think it does.
I mean, those books have like a... She's been through hell.
Yeah, really. Yeah, right.
She's lived in a horror movie her
whole
life.
That's very true. I don't want to keep saying like everything he does, like Del Toro, should or has to have a horror slant to it. But you mentioned superhero movies, and I can't help thinking like, oh, man, if he was directing The New Mutants, like how excited would you be about that?
Which, much more than Josh Boone.
Yeah,
whoever's doing
exactly.
That.
And, you know, that's the quote-unquote horror superhero movie, But if it was ever going to happen.
Like him doing a Blade movie.
Yeah, that'd be
or
cool.
Or Daughter of Blade. I want to see a Blade daughter movie. Him doing that, yes.
Yeah, because Del Toro did Blade 2, so.
Don't cast Jane Levy, though. I'm against Jane Levy as Blade's daughter.
I just want to be on record as saying we're not going to whitewash that. My number one, newly promoted number one, is a movie that I like an awful lot. It is a foreign movie. It does have subtitles, and it is Julia Ducournau's Raw, starring Grenace Meslier, Ilea Rumpf, and Laurent Lucas. I will be the first to admit that this may be one of the more art housey movies on my list, and that's not just because it's subtitled. It does have a couple really good performances from the ladies and Meslier and Rumpf. French horror is kind of interesting. It's something that I want to say, like, the early part of the 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s.
It had a boom.
It sure did. And they were kind of known for not pulling any punches. And Ducournau follows suit in that. This movie has gore. There is blood. There is some stuff in this movie. But she manages to humanize her characters and their predicament. I don't want to draw similarities just because it's two foreign movies. It's two female directors. But I think much like what Anna Lily Amanpour did in A Girl Walks Home, Ducournau does. She made a movie about emotion and coming to terms with oneself that is just a very, very drastic way of showing that on screen. It is about trying to find your place. The younger sister is following in the footsteps of her older sister at this private school where their parents went. She's just not realizing how much she's following in her family's footsteps.
This is one of those where it's like, oh, that was 2 years ago? Like, for some reason, this feels like it was this year or last year. Whereas my number one feels like it's a lot older. My number one, I was kind of shocked that it came out in 2016 because I've been a shill for this movie for so long. It's also a foreign movie with subtitles directed by Sang-ho Yeon. It is Train to Busan. It's a P. It's spelled Busan. But Zane lives near it, so it's Busan.
Okay.
It's Train to Busan, and Zane takes a train to Busan all the time, and I think of this movie every time. It's hard to talk about without getting hyperbole, because I don't think anything I say is over-exaggerated. It is one of the best zombie movies of the last 25 years. And I say that without hesitation, because it is. I would say one of the best five zombie movies of the last 25 years, because it's a phenomenal movie. It has all the elements that I love from, not a zombie movie, but similar, 28 Days Later, where it's got that family feel. You understand the need to survive, not just from a human, but from a future standpoint, from a family standpoint. You have the element of, like, humans are sometimes more evil than the monsters we're fighting against. Sometimes humans are the monsters we're fighting. It's got that claustrophobic feel. It is a bottle that it just happens to be moving. It's a zombie outbreak on a train, pretty much, and there's more to it than that. It's not that simple, but it's such a good movie and so powerful and so emotional and at times heartbreaking. And maybe it hits me more because I'm a dad, and it is basically just this dad trying to keep his daughter alive during this zombie outbreak on a train and trying to get her somewhere safe. It's such a powerful movie. And if you like father-daughter movies or survival movies or zombie movies, it checks all those boxes. It's such an amazingly powerful movie. Chances are it'll get an American remake, which, whatever, it's not going to be as good. I believe it's on Netflix. This is one of those where, read, just watch it. It's such a good movie, and I hate calling it a good zombie movie because I feel like that's an injustice, because I feel like that narrows it down too much. It's a phenomenal movie.
You know, a lot of times I'm surprised that movies make your list. This one you do bring up an awful lot. And it was one that I still haven't gotten around to seeing. I will at some point. But yeah, I was pretty sure this was going to be your number one. Just kind of looking at what we have to pick from for 2016. Looking at what we have to pick from 2017. I guess I feel like I'm less excited the closer we get. Because these movies, I think, are still fresh in people's minds.
I think my top three I really, really like.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like
I mean,
I really like 4 out of 5. I needed a fifth, and I was like,
the fifth was tough, but I like it. I enjoy it. My four I really like, but the 3 I really love.
Yeah, so to find
one
out,
one of them might be surprising. Did you have any also-rans for 2016?
I didn't. No.
This is the first year I could have went 10. Belko Experiment was okay. Yeah. I don't know if that was a 16 or 17. That's got one of those weird release.
Yeah, I think it was Festival Circuit on 16.
Yeah, I had Lights Out, Morgan, which is technically I think could fall
that's
in.
A horror
it checks
movie.
A
that's
lot.
Fine.
The Other Side of the Door with Coral's mom was okay. And then one that I just remembered, I'm kicking myself because I didn't mention From Dark in the 2014 episode, and it just dawned on me like I skipped it. That would have been very high because I love that.
I didn't mention Cooties in 2014 either.
Oh, yeah.
But I like that one a lot.
From 2016, this one would have been very high on my list, probably at least number 2, The Girl with All the Gifts. It's one that maybe doesn't feel like a horror movie, and I think that's why I didn't think of it until just now. But, yeah, I mean, it's a zombie movie. But, yeah, so next week, 2017.
It's our last list, right?
And It. Yeah, next week we do 2017 and It.
We may be talking a lot about It next week.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll talk about It a lot next week and a few others from 2017. But until then.
Keep it up.